Welcome back to another edition of the Sound Singer Podcast. Before we get started, I just wanted to acknowledge that this past Sunday, April 16th, was World Voice Day. And the theme of this World Voice Day is Your Voice Matters. And I'm here to remind you, it really does matter. The voice is in our bodies, so anything going on can affect it. I can't stress enough how important it is to make basic vocal hygiene a huge part of your daily life. This includes hydration, vocal rest, and prioritizing getting a good night's sleep, but also having a healthy mindset. And last but not least, vocalizing. Vocalizing is just like exercising your voice. And in celebration of this World Voice Day, I'm offering 10% off my course, Mix Evolution. So if you're looking to get back into singing or improving your skill as a singer, this course might be great for you. And this week I'm offering 10% off using the coupon code World Voice Day, all caps. So if you go to my website, alitavocalstudio.com/course, you can find information on the course itself and you can sign up there. Again, the coupon code is World Voice Day, all caps. And if you've got questions, feel free to send me a DM on Instagram or send me an email. Wishing you all a very happy World Voice Day week. And remember to take the time to celebrate your voice, to be grateful for your voice, and remember that your voice does matter. So let's get started on the episode today. My guest is Oksana Kavalyova. She's a registered psychotherapist specializing in trauma, and she is also a music therapist. Oksana believes in integrating different approaches to fit each individual person. She's passionate about music and believes that healing is connecting with ourselves and with the people around us, both verbally and musically. Oksana, it's so great to have you today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, Alida.
So can you tell us a little bit about how you got started?
I was singing on stage from when I was 3 years and a half, and gradually moved into mental health in the past, 20 years. I wear two hats, sometimes at the same time, and other times it's just one hat or another, a music therapist and a psychotherapist. And as a music therapist, that's my first degree outside of music and culture and whatever degrees I had before becoming a music therapist. And I worked I still work with children, individuals with special needs, mostly with autism, Down syndrome, learning disabilities. I work with elderly population in, doing music therapy groups in different long-term care homes. I worked in hospice. And as a psychotherapist, I work full-time right now at the Family Counseling Center in Niagara, and also do my sideway private practice. So my population that I work with are children, adults, women, a lot of women, survivors of trauma, sexual abuse, domestic violence, in addition to, anxiety, depression, etc.
Speaking of trauma, that's something that has become more and more talked about, especially with authors like Gabor Maté. How does trauma affect us as performing artists and as vocal artists? And in your view, what steps can we take to overcome the impact of trauma?
Trauma affects our voices. Voices are affected by whatever is going on in our bodies, right? It's the body. And whatever is going on with our emotions too. So it's basically, it's physiological effect and psychological effect all combined. When we think about our voice, what do we need to produce a good, healthy voice? It's our body, right? It's everything that is included, all the physiology of voice, vocal production, breathing. And those are the things that are getting affected by any trauma. When we experience trauma, probably your listeners heard about fight, flight, freeze, responses. Now we have phone, the fourth F, which is submissive response. But when we talk about fight, flight, or freeze, just those words, we understand that there is something going on with our bodies, with our muscles. So the usual thing, it's tension of the muscles, which affects all the muscles, including the vocal, all the muscles that are you know, required for vocal production, voice production, right? And when we talk about breathing, obviously breathing is involved a lot in the voice, and that is the area which affects by trauma, by anxiety, by any kind of interference from outside or from inside, which is a traumatic response. In cases where really traumatic responses are inevitable and a teacher or a student can't deal with them, I would say directly go to do your work with a professional therapist or counselor.
So what forms of therapy would you recommend?
Well, there are lots of, we are lucky we are living in the 21st century with so many methods and approaches. When it is trauma, we can't just work cognitively. We used to, and we have a lot of research, but because nothing else was available, right? So cognitive behavioral therapy is good, but from my own experience, not when there is complex trauma involved, not when there is any trauma, actually, because clients spend many months, if not years, doing the older type of therapies, which did not include the body. And, the newer, I'm saying 30 years old and a little bit older, EMDR, which I got trained last year, and I can attest how beautiful it works with different types of trauma. IFS, which is internal family system, it's another very good approach. And many EMDR therapists are integrating different types of therapy, including IFS, parts work, vocal therapy. Again, it has to be with a therapist. There is an approach in music therapy called vocal psychotherapy, which was developed by Diane Austin. I was very, very lucky and privileged to have her and to lead that session of her during this year online conference for music therapy. Of course, psychotherapy, as I said, any kind of therapy, if you want to look for yourself for psychotherapy, look for trauma-informed and trauma-based approaches.
I love how you articulated that, because you're educating us on that. It's not just about the mind, it's about the entire body. And Absolutely. That's why it seems to be that somatic therapy and EMDR seems to be much more effective.
EMDR stays for eye movement desensitization reprocessing, which was developed at the end of 80s, beginning of 90s. Now, everybody thinks, oh, it's eye movement. It's not just eye movement now. We have a body of research saying that any kind of bilateral stimulation works, being, again, it's somatic, it's eyes or your hand on your chest tapping, or we have all kinds of different things, the gears, the tools that we can use, for example, buzzers, which goes left, right in your hand, or the light, again, because it's very difficult for a therapist. Personally, I never tried because I know my arm will not sustain the whole session of being moved left to right and back and forth in front of the eyes of my clients. So we try to do different things. There are light bars which are moving left to right, or you can, as a therapist, you can use two different colored things in your hand, whatever it is, you know, so that the idea is to move the eyes, right? Or it can be auditory stimulation also. Again, I have this just a beep sound in your ears and in your headset, going to the left, to the right, left and right, and back and forth. Or it can be music also. Personally, I didn't try it with music yet, but I'm also trained basic training level of CRM, which is another model, trauma model. It stands for Comprehensive Resource Model. And there, Lisa Schwartz, a developer of that model, is using music. And I was so, so happy about that. Again, we can use music. We can find so many YouTube videos now, or, you know, music videos with bilateral stimulation or bilateral music. Again, we have to be aware of that. Any fast tempo will potentially activate, if you have any traumatic responses, will activate these responses. So if you want to use it as a self-regulation tool, it has to be slow. Speaking of butterfly tap, if we do it on our chest here, again, butterfly tap, there are numerous videos on YouTube. You can, your listeners can look at it. It has to be slow. If we use the eye movement, slow, if we want to regulate ourselves. I would never recommend using it fast without help of practitioner.
Wow. And then as you're doing that bilateral stimulation, are you yourself leading the patient through a series of questions, or are they telling their story, or how does it work?
With the EMDR or with the CRM, which also uses bilateral stimulation, it's before getting trained, I remember some years ago when I was in training to become a psychotherapist, counseling psychology master's degree that I was getting, we were looking at different approaches on the videos. And I was sitting, remembering, thinking, gosh, this is really weird. I don't understand how it works. How does it even work? But then being trained in CRM model first, and then a few years later in EMDR, I can say it works. Your system, your body, your, not just body, I mean the whole system, your psyche, your body, the system is there to heal. We just don't know how sometimes, so we need the outsider to lead us, to facilitate this healing. And just to trust in the process. So during the EMDR, you know, the bilateral stimulation is there, or before it was called bilateral stimulation, now we call it DAS, which is basically the idea is the client is back in the memories about trauma, but at the same time is here, right? So it's being aware, it's dual awareness system. So we are back there, but we are in here in the present moment. Because if we are only back there, there is a huge risk of being re-traumatized. Why some clients who came to me after experiencing prolonged exposure therapy, which used to be one of the golden standards before, they came to me re-traumatized, or to other therapists, because it's just too much, because that type of therapy, or maybe those type of therapists at that time, they didn't use it, maybe not knowing the newer research, that we need to make sure that the clients in therapy are feeling safe in the present moment, that whatever was happening back then is not happening here, and our system, our brain understands that. So we don't ask the question during this bilateral stimulation because the client is back then, right? Whatever is going on. And I'm not just saying that they're always in the memory. During, it starts with the memory about the event, or with the sensation, with the feeling about something. But then we move into this healing process. So it's short segments of bilateral stimulation, whether it's being the eyes or the auditory or the tactile. And then I stop the client, and then the client describes what he or she had seen in their mind or felt, or the body sensation, whatever, or emotions that are coming. And then we do it back and forth again and again and again. And it clears sometimes one session is enough to clear whatever trauma or whatever traumatic event we are working on. And it's always one, because especially when people come with complex trauma, we have to do it over and over with different events. But mm-hmm. it doesn't mean that if somebody comes with 100 events, traumatic events, we need to work on 100 events, because usually it comes with the umbrella, right? If we talk about different events, it can be umbrella of, you know, abandonment, something from childhood, being abandoned so many times, but it's under that umbrella, or being not good enough, or, you know, you name it, all kinds of different, it's like grapes, you know, like one, one thing, another thing. It's not individual grapes that we are working on. It always comes together under the umbrella of, you know, subcategory of one traumatic subcategory, let's say.
That just sounds like such an effective tool to help them to kind of release that. Mm-hmm. Very often clients have shared with me past experiences where someone said something or give them criticism and they're kind of still back in that.
They're stuck there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what trauma is. We get stuck in that bodily sensations, in those emotions. That's why when we ask the questions, any trauma therapist will say, what happened? What do you remember seeing, feeling, bodily sensations, sensation of touch, hearing, sounds, whatever sounds were there in that moment. It's very, very often that we remember the sounds. Some sense of taste, smell. This is less. Sometimes people don't remember or nothing was happening, but in many cases, like smell is very, very strong, right? So smell or sound, boom, immediately you are back then.
Wow. Yeah. And this is why we have to become aware of triggers, mm-hmm. right? But once you've received treatment, hopefully the idea is that you're able to manage yes. when the nerves come up.
Yes. It's not some clients who say, I don't think that I will ever forget. And I will always say, you are not coming here to forget. It's unforgettable what happened to you. Mm-hmm. You can't, I can't erase your memory, but it's the changes of how this trauma affects you, making it less strong on your system and living with it. Yes, it happened to me, but I survived and I'm thriving now. So I can manage, I can deal with whatever triggers are coming, and I can breathe and I can live.
Hope is something that we very often forget. And yes. I want people to come away from this episode feeling that sense of hope, that and that they're not alone. If they've experienced trauma, they are not alone. I got to tell you, many of my clients have dealt with traumatic experiences and have been very open about it. And many of my colleagues have talked about this as well. And it's the voice is such a personal instrument. So it is more often than not brought up in a lesson. And, you know, there are courses for voice teachers out there to help guide your students through that. However, we have to remember, we are not trained psychotherapists. And so this is why educating ourselves on this is really important, so that we know how to refer the client to get some help. And if you're out there and you're struggling and you're sitting on the fence about getting help, it takes courage, but I got to tell you, it's going to make a huge difference in how you perform and how you are able to manage through your performance anxiety and all of the goals that you have.
Mm-hmm. Because again, when we speak about performance anxiety, what happens with our body? We get tension everywhere, which affects our larynx and all other muscles that are involved in the production of the voice. And your voice gets affected. It's, you know, the pitch gets affected. Anything about the voice that we can talk, volume, you know, the pitch, the depth of your voice, everything gets affected. And mm-hmm. The breathing, again, when we are anxious, what happens with our breathing? We breathe with our chest, and that's how we get hyperventilated. And that's just, it's a slippery slope, and it's actually the vicious cycle. We get wrong type of breathing and we get ourselves even more anxious. because of that.
Yeah.
So the first thing would be to learn how to breathe when you feel anxious, when you feel this performance anxiety or any kind of anxiety. How do we slow down? Because it is your autonomic nervous system, which is, you know, sympathetic and parasympathetic. We need parasympathetic nervous system to step in for that calming effect. Because sympathetic nervous system, it's your fight or flight. So that's immediately affects how you breathe and your, you know, the vitals, your blood pressure will shoot up, where your heart rate will be fast, and you will not be able to manage everything. And breathing is becoming either too fast or shallow.
Yeah. So there's something about slowing down your exhales that's kind of teaching your body that there's no threat, right?
Yes. Yes. And when we teach breathing, you know, I teach kids, adults, no matter the age. I like this. Many therapists are teaching 4-4-4, the square breathing. And I know in schools, they are teaching square breathing. Square meaning 4-4-4-4, 4 in, 4 stop, 4 out, 4 stop. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. Because the exhale should be longer, because that's when your parasympathetic system or your vagus nerve will be, you know, connected and slowing down. So you can breathe in at on the count of 4, but you breathe out on the count of, the longer the better, I say 4-8, maybe 4-4-8-4.
So you would inhale for 4, and then would you hold your breath for?
You know what? I read numerous articles saying that it's better to hold your breath.
Yeah.
So you kind of like slowing it down. You help your system to slow down, and then breathing out on 8, and then slowing down again. So it's not 4-4-4-4. It's 4-4-8-4.
Gotcha. So we inhale for 4, hold for 4, exhale for 8.
And hold for 8.
And then hold for 4.
For 4, yes.
Yes. Amazing. Hey guys, so we have some homework. Let's implement that. Because, you know, I've heard that can be just effective for day-to-day life.
Oh, and yes. Like,
for people that deal with insomnia.
Absolutely, yeah.
Sleep. Yeah. So, wow, that's such an effective.
And I, as a music therapist or as a, you know, the singer also, I like to add the voice because, again, when we look at ancient tuning, humming, toning, whatever we call it, using the voice. So you inhale and then you do on om or whatever, you know, even if you are not a yogi, it doesn't matter. Just with the sound, because when you close your mouth, the sound is inside. You feel the vibration inside the whole body. And it's also vibration in internal organs. You know, it's kind of like massaging your internal organs, and it all slows down, and your ventral vagus nerve system is getting connected and working.
I love that. Thank you so much for bringing that up, because we have a tool that is accessible right here and now, our breath, right? Yes. My next episode is going to be all about breathing. So this is a really good segue into that. So you talked a little bit about another branch of a field that you work in, which is music therapy. Can you tell us what a music therapy session would look like and how patients can benefit from it?
Again, as I said earlier, it depends who we work with. If I have a child, non-speaking, autistic child, what would be considered level 2 or 3 of support, you know, we would be working on different goals as opposed to if I work with some elderly person, right, or with some trauma survivor. But in a nutshell, it's the use of music, musical elements, two elements being rhythm, meter, melody, harmony, you name it, everything that is music, to help a person to achieve some positive changes in their life, being working on cognitive skills, on speech, communication skills, speech and communication being different, because sometimes communication is nonverbal, non-speaking, right? So we still need to communicate. Motor skills, you know, for people who have difficulties walking after traumatic brain injury, for example, or with Parkinson's disease or any kind of things, situations. We work with memories and memory care, dementia care. We work with the emotional development, or, you know, maintaining this emotional skills and psychological well-being, spiritual well-being also, any kind of well-being.
Do you have any recommended reading, or who are your favorite people to listen to when it comes to mental health in general?
So our own Vancouver-based Gabor Mate, I met him, not personally, but he signed two or three books that I was holding, and I had I was lucky to even talk a little bit and have a picture with him. He came to Oakville here in Ontario in September.
Wow.
He's any of his books. I love listening and watching Brené Brown. She has a PhD. She's a social worker, psychotherapist, a great clinician and a researcher. I like, of course, one of the classical books for therapists is The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk. There are lots of other books on trauma, on mental health. I also like this book by Lori Gottlieb. Maybe you should talk to someone. I think it's a very approachable, great book for anybody who thinks about going to therapy but is afraid of. It tells you the story of different clients that she had, and I was reading it as a clinician, and I was laughing and I was crying, and I saw so many similarities with some of my clients, and just striking. But I believe it's for anyone who is not sure, who is scared of going to therapy, that would be a good book to start with, and kind of ease and like, oh, I can do good.
I love all of those people that you mentioned. And that's a great reminder. I think that, you know, this fear of going to therapy, would you agree that things are better now, that people are more open to dealing with their problems and seeing a psychotherapist?
Yes, there is less stigma now, and people are more aware of mental health being as important as our physical health, and physical health cannot be good without mental health. So we are all one whole system. So it's a holistic approach. You have to not just do a massage on your body, but kind of massage on your soul too.
I love that. That's such a great analogy. You know, I think we need to work on our internal health to help us to be able to live better lives and to be able to perform optimally and enjoy what we have, the time left that we have on this earth, to be able to enjoy it. We do have to overcome our hardships, and we can't do that alone.
Absolutely. The next step for the government would be to support us mental health practitioners and to include it in any federal program. You know, here in Ontario is OHIP. I don't know what you have in BC. You know, all this provincial health health programs, right? Benefits, because yes, right now it's either you pay out of pocket, or if you're lucky to have benefits covering mental health, or if you are lucky to get into the system with subsidized fee, like the place that I work
at. Wouldn't that be wonderful if we could have coverage for that? Oksana, how can people find you if they'd like to get in touch?
Well, I am active on Instagram. My Instagram handle, I think you can post it, right, in the notes.
Yeah, I've got Oksana_music therapy.
That's right, yeah. I'm also on Psychology Today for people who want, you know, to approach me. And I offer 10, 15 minutes of free consultation, because we need to hear the voice of the person we are thinking, you know, and just to have a chat and to see if they are a good fit. And you can you can Google me. I have some videos there.
Thank you so much for everything you've taught us today and sharing your journey. It's been so helpful to talk about this. And I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us. So Oksana, thank you.
Thank you, Alida. And thank you everyone who listens to this episode. And I wish everybody physical and mental health.